Hello and welcome to the Data for Subscriptions podcast, where we talk about how to run better subscription businesses and what that takes. I'm your host, Berat Bonian, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Arnon Shimoni. Welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here.
Some practicalities before we get going, guys, is that you can ask your questions so that we can see them in the chat and we'll pick them up along the way if it fits, obviously, with the narrative. Otherwise, we'll make sure that we have some Q&A time at the end as well. So back then to our topic, which is all about billing management, billing transformation, and in particular, the challenges and the pains. Before we get there, I wanted to ask you, Arnon, that you were previously at Pleo, which is a financial services fintech company doing billing, and then now you're at Storytel, again, running billing for Storytel. Now, with Pleo being a B2B company and Storytel being a B2C company, can you talk about the similarities and the differences when it comes to billing and monetization between B2B and B2C?
There's so many differences, though. I'd say even when you start from your customers, obviously in kind of like a direct-to-consumer product, you're selling to an individual customer. It might be part of a family, but it's still an individual. With B2B, you're selling to an individual still, but in a context of a much bigger company. And then you're selling a product that will be used by many, many people often in that company. So the sensitivities are different. How you price that will be different. As an example, we could take something like Netflix, which lets you have multiple profiles, which is very common in kind of like a consumer product. In a business product, you usually want to monetize that. So you'll want to charge per user. Slack does this, you know, HubSpot does this. It's very common. So the sensitivities are different. The way you price is different. But that also means that the scales are different. When you think about billing at a company like Spotify, like Storytel, like Netflix, the scale is massive. When you think of a company like HubSpot, which is, let's say, a very extreme example, they also have, you know, hundreds of thousands of customers potentially. That's still only hundreds of thousands and not tens of millions or hundreds of millions. So that, like, off the top of my head, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. It's just like that difference in who you're selling to and the scale.
Could you talk to where, in your view, monetization starts and ends?
Monetization for me is the whole strategy, right? It's how you price, who you're pricing for. How do you communicate these pricing, what's your strategy? And that could mean even how you show the price online. Are you showing it in specific app stores, only on your website, that kind of stuff. And it goes all the way through the billing, through the actual process, until the customer leaves you for the last time and you report all of the financials. So often, even if you've billed someone today and they've left you, the monetization journey only ends probably at the end of the financial year when you're done reporting, accumulating the revenue for that customer, reporting it, closing your books. So it's like a very, very long process, which I think you often tend to forget. Just how long the timeframes are when it comes to monetization. But for me, it's everything, again, from the just marketing and communication on pricing all the way to the revenue booking.
That's interesting. I mean, I would say most people typically talk about more the revenue management side of things, and maybe extended into the complete life cycle of a customer. But it's quite clear that for you, it's the complete end-to-end from the actual business strategy to how you actually communicate and market yourself all the way. Okay.
Yeah. Good. To be clear, I don't like in my role, I don't have to deal with that entire life cycle. It is in my head. It's something I think about. It's something that I plan for when we're building a platform, when we're building infrastructure, when we're building tooling for that. But there are many, many stakeholders for that whole monetization journey, right, around the company.
So let's talk billing. So in your view, you've experienced running billing at Pleo, as you mentioned, and now at Storytel. I've also understood that you have been quite vocal and open about the fact that running or optimizing billing system is complicated and risky.
Oh, 100%. billing, I think for a lot of people is often seen when you're starting up, when you're just starting to bill your customers, let's say in a startup, you're thinking about it often as an engineering problem. Like, okay, how do I remember conversations with CEOs in previous companies. How do we get the credit card like from the customer and make sure that we get some revenue? Like, that's the first thing that they think about. As you mature, as you go through the maturity, different maturity stages of a company, that taking the credit card is no longer the problem, right? That's already solved. There are lots of tools, lots of solutions for that. And then it becomes, okay, how do we increase revenue? How do we manage multiple products? How do we upsell? How do we cross-sell? And then it comes to, how do we manage the data for that? How do we know if a customer has upgraded when we sent them that offer? How do we know which one's converted? It just balloons, right?
Yeah.
And you could include that in billing, or you could say that's a data issue. For me, it's very close to billing. I'm not sure I would include it in like the billing life cycle, but it's certainly within that scope of influence.
So you mentioned several things that billing influences or interacts with. What are the, let's say, the critical touch points that in your experience billing mostly interacts with?
It's everything, right? Again, like, how do you make sure that you're showing the right price on the website so that the customer comes in and knows what they're going to pay for, right? That's a touch point. That's a touch point with either marketing on your commercial website or in an application. If you have like if it's in app or if it's in the web app. So like there could be multiple different kind of areas there. It's you have a touch point with a customer themselves, right? They have to make sure that they see the right price. They have to know what they're paying for. They have to have the ability to cancel, modify. They need clarity into what they're going to pay for. They need to be able to fix billing problems if they come. So there's communication being sent out. There are offers, which is often a CRM or like customer lifecycle management team. It could be marketing. It could be growth. There's lots of touch points there. You have, again, the revenue side of things. You have finance. You have you might have security people. Like if you need to go through the PCI process to make sure that you're collecting all the information correctly and storing it correctly. GDPR, that's a favorite of compliance. It's just everywhere, right? And that's before we even talked about the tech. Like there's DevOps involved, right? You have to make sure that thing is alive. You have to make sure that you're returning things within a reasonable time frame for the app to keep it alive. And I spoke about entitlements in one of my blog posts in the past. I don't think we want to get into that today, but how do you make sure that if you can't fetch the payment status for a customer, that you don't just block them off the app, right? That's a consideration that you have to make. And that's usually within the kind of like experience teams for the app. There's so many touch points, which makes it very challenging to work in billing, because when it works, no one is aware of these things. Yeah. No one knows that stuff could break violently. And you said the word risk at the beginning. The risk is insane when it comes to money, right?
No, I think this is a really important point you're making. I do believe that some people might see billing as so-called, quote-unquote, only billing. But I think the reality that I see it is much closer to how you describe it, is that it really sits at the center of more or less everything. Let me just drill a little bit more into this complexity that you're talking about. How does this complexity impact a business, its strategy, and engineering?
It's hard to say, because every company is individual and their setup would be usually highly specialized for their business. What I've seen is that this kind of tends to lock you into a kind of like a frame of mind where you say, okay, these are the tools I have available. This is how I can price. You might have created some ability to change prices for a specific market, or, you know, change prices for a specific campaign or landing page, that kind of stuff. And then you tend to think in those terms. And often what you get is kind of like a very narrow view of how you can price, how you can sell your product, how you can go to market with it. And that's a limitation of the tools that you've built. And it's usually not very clever to overbuild and start giving too many levers, because then you end up dispersing and you create a complete mess in terms of the number of SKUs, or, you know, like how many products do you actually have to sell, a stock keeping unit kind of thing, right? If you over specify, then you have too much freedom, and then you have no visibility into what you're actually selling, and you're confusing customers. Like, those are like almost two spectrums of the same thing. And they're both problematic for operations and for even revenue forecasting. But also, as I said, like the go-to-market movements.
Yeah, I'll just expand on that, and honest that I think that absolutely there's a limitation to the tools, but I also think that there's a limitation when it comes to competence and know-how, because I think there are plenty of companies out there, especially I would say the ones that have strong engineering culture, that they like to look at billing and go, well, how hard can this be? We've actually built a product. If we can build a product, of course, we can also solve the billing aspect, because it's only billing. And I think therein lies quite a lot of challenges that one creates oneself. And I think you explained that very well, so I don't need to go into that.
I actually want to say one thing about that, because I think that could be like, it's valid to build your own system if you have fully thought of all the constraints. For example, if I'm a company and I'm only selling, so I live in Denmark, if I'm only selling within Denmark, the rules are quite clear. I know who my customers are. I know I'm never going to have to ship to Sweden. I'm never going to have to calculate a different sales tax. I know I'm never going to have to report revenue differently. Then, you know, it might be worth doing. But that assumes that I know the future limitations as well, and that I have no intent to change kind of like the environment that I'm in. If you ever do want to create that growth, you want to go to different markets, you might not want to care about, the different tax rates, then I would say, yeah, maybe building it is not right for you.
You never want to have your billing system being an inhibitor of your business and growth.
Correct. But it is. And it will often probably be.
Yes. Can I ask you, are there ways that we can avoid some of these complexities?
That's a really hard one. I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's an inherently complex problem. And as I said, it's not strictly an engineering problem. We tend to think of it as an engineering problem, but the engineering side of it is usually, you know, the problems are pretty well known. A lot of people will complain, and I've complained about this too in the past, you know, calendar billing, what happens on a leap day? How do you deal with proration when you add a user, when you remove a user? They're annoying problems to solve. They're tedious, but they're not hard. They're not something that will stop your business from advancing. However, I think it's really hard to know where your business is going. And you might add new products. You might want to price things that you haven't priced before. You might want to create all these kinds of different incentives for growth. And there, I think it's actually really, really hard to kind of future-proof without having a group of people who understand these problems, understand the problem space, and can actually build stuff around that. And sometimes it means building stuff around your current tooling, what you might call like different middlewares in the software engineering world, right? You might want to create a new middleware that kind of translates a certain business requirement to something that your current tool knows how to handle. I think that's the only way that I know of right now to kind of avoid that limitation. If you don't want to limit your business, if you don't want to just say, this is the tool, this is what it supports, we cannot stray left and right from there.
You know, you mentioned that you've written another blog about separating entitlements from billing. In fact, just to kind of toss that in, absolutely, you're right. It's not entirely easy to know how one can avoid complexity. But a part of the answer lies in how you articulated that point of view that you shared, which we, by the way, will make sure is available in the show notes and would deserve a totally separate kind of podcast episode on its own. But just to say, what you did there, I find, is you've articulated a way to avoid pigeonholing oneself by locking oneself into a total billing system and find a better way to separate and create efficiency, so you can actually do the entitlements in the right way and you can then feed the billing system in the right way. I think that's a great learning. And I think there are more spaces we can approach the same, which I kind of use the term avoid pigeonholing oneself and locking oneself into an inferior solution. But with that, maybe that's a good bridge as well to talk about the different ways one can approach solving for billing needs. So at the respective ends, we have either you build your own or you just buy everything. Yeah. So why don't you walk us through your thinking there? Of course, the middle ground would be some form of a hybrid, a mix.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was alluding to. I think there are a lot of solved problems that you wouldn't want to build yourself, right? So when we're talking about the scheduling of when does an invoice go out and how to do the math on that invoice to, you know, make sure the customer is paying the right amount and that you've calculated the tax correctly, I just wouldn't build that myself. It's not hard. It's just very tedious. And there are so many edge cases that you would have to plan for that just makes it kind of not worth your time. It's not focusing on anything that you as a business are specializing in. And that then it becomes kind of a distraction. So for that kind of mindset, I would say buy stuff off the shelf. Now, herein is a problem, because if you look at Stripe, for example, which is one of my favorite tools, I absolutely love them, but there's a limitation in what you can do with their kind of API. If you just send like Stripe updates all the time, like they added a user, they removed a user, they did this, they did that, you're going to end up with massive invoices with like lots of proration and like dozens of lines, and it becomes really hard to understand. But also sometimes you, for example, this is a very common scenario, you want to create a minimum charge. You want to commit your customer, this is especially true in the business world, you might want to commit them to a minimum of, let's say, 500 units per month, right? And that's kind of hard to do with Stripe by default. So you have to figure out how to send the correct data for Stripe to bill them correctly. This is not just a Stripe problem. It's common with other tools as well. So there you have to create a translation layer, right? From your own product, the way that your product thinks and your product talks. And you have to translate that into the business rules that Stripe understands or any other tool. So I don't think for most companies going 100% with one tool works. I really struggle to see how you can connect a product, like your own product, to a third-party tool and be happy with that forever. I think it would be foolish to do that, because you're then exactly kind of pigeonholing yourself into a very tightly connected situation, which you're going to have a hard time expanding from and innovating on your business, innovating on your monetization strategy or your monetization tactics. So that's like one spectrum, one side of the spectrum. The other side is you build everything yourself, the ultimate form of control. You have full control over the entire, you know, business logic, and you can decide, you know, whatever, however way you want to build it. You want to charge every 13 months and give one free month at the end of the year, and then do billing in arrears, and then charge upfront for 6 months and then in arrears. Like, you can do that with if you build it yourself. But again, I think that's going to be extremely tedious. And unless that is like a core component of your business and you cannot operate in another way, I would strongly advise against it, because you're going to be creating so much tech debt over time.
Yeah,
that's going to be really, really hard to undo. You're not going to be able to migrate to another system, because you've built so many different things that are critical to your business that you're relying on that just don't exist in the outside world. So if you are going to build something yourself, you know, again, I said there are situations where you still might want to do that. I would highly recommend looking at how another product that is off the shelf works, and at least mimicking the terminology, kind of like the data structures, even if you're not going to use all of them, at least kind of mimic them, so that if you do decide to go down that route in the future and move to one of these vendors, that it's not like an entire rewrite, like you're not rewriting your entire product to support that. But I think you said it correctly, and the truth kind of lies somewhere in the middle. There are things that you will have to build yourself, but generally buy as much as you can.
So the situation, just to make it a little bit more complex on the topic of complexity, is that then let's also add the layer of the fact that you typically already have a system in place, which is, we're going to talk a little bit more about Storytel further down our conversation. And that is also, I think probably that's the first factor on the table to begin with. I mean, we could have ideas of, if I play back what you said, is you seem to be more in the camp of building a best of breed type of solution as opposed to best of suite. Like, you just buy this one bundle that can solve it all. What I hear you say is that, you know, one needs to look at the business, the specific requirements, try to find the best mix, which is what we refer to as a hybrid here. Yeah. But the reality is that often companies have something already in place. There is a historic business in place. So I wanted to ask you, when one looks at driving a, let's say, billing transformation project, do you have some input for us in terms of how we should take that decision, and when is a good time to make that shift, if there ever is? You talked also earlier about the fact that one needs to try to understand where the business is heading, yep, where the business is growing. Do you have some advice for us here?
On the business side, no, because that's usually something that, you know, it comes from the market, the board, executive leadership, right? It's something that usually I don't have very good visibility into. I can guess, and I can see where my competitors are going, and I track that very carefully, because a lot of times you kind of want to imitate what they do, and sometimes that could be a race to the bottom, by the way.
Yeah,
but sometimes that's the way that's the direction the market goes, and you have to adapt to that, right? Usage-based billing is an example that everyone, like, it's the hot new thing. It's not new and it's not hot, but it's the hot new thing that everyone keeps talking about now, as if it's like a completely new invention that we've never seen before. Then you kind of have to adapt to that, because you don't want to be the odd one out. You don't want to be the one left over that still, I don't know, sends like a quote to sign, where everyone else is just makes it like super easy to sign up. So on the business front, I don't really have a very good tip other than just monitor and see where things are going, and understand maybe what your own limitations are in terms of what can you kind of shoehorn in, what can you force onto your system, again, with maybe some middleware, maybe you build something else. Maybe it's not perfect, but it's close enough. Kind of, you know, it still goes with the same vibe, even if it's not identical. But I think the most important thing when you take a transformation project like that is understanding where the risks are and where you're reducing the risks. Usually you take on these kinds of projects because you've identified a risk. You're saying, I cannot keep maintaining my current system because my engineers don't want to work on it, and they'll quit if they have to keep working on it. That's a risk. You're saying, oh, well, we haven't built it in a way that's scalable. If we grow another 50% over the next year, it'll start breaking. We won't be able to bill customers. That's a risk. If you think, well, I've put all my eggs in one payment processor's basket, and if that payment processor decides to boot us, which happens, there are horror stories all over Hacker News, Reddit, you can see them pretty much daily. If you lose that ability to funnel money into revenue into a company, that's a risk, right? And when you've identified a sufficient amount of those risks, then you can formulate a plan on how to tackle that. If you don't know what your risks are, then you have to do that risk assessment. You have to figure out where your system might fail. And system includes people and processes, right? It's not just this piece of software could fail. I don't know, the Kubernetes, the pod is flailing. I don't know. Right. That's not the only, that is a risk, but it's not the only risk. So map out the risks and figure out which ones you're going to tackle. You might not be able to tackle every one of them. You might not be able to save some of the engineers. Some of them might even be very angry that you're even thinking of looking at a new product instead of keeping the current one and expanding it further. I know personally that I've also been frustrated when I've been told we have to change billing systems,
yeah,
when it comes from someone who, you know, might not be well versed in what we support and you know, all the processes around it. But in the end, it's about exactly that, reducing the risk.
Let's talk Storytel.
Yeah.
How have you decided to tackle the billing question at Storytel?
So this actually predates me by a lot. So I joined a relatively mature company. And it's a homegrown system there. And it's surprisingly well built, to the point where, for example, a lot of the kind of revenue management and revenue recognition is done in-house, which I would not have done personally. I think it's an insane thing to build. But we have it and it works. And I don't want to touch it. Like, I'm not going to say, oh, let's reduce the risk there, because I think the risk is very low because it's so well built in that regard. So you're asking how was this decision made? Predates me by a long, long time. And I'm not sure who made that decision. But it's also important to say that every decision is right for when it was made. And I think at the point where they decided, let's build our own, let's build it this way, let's build it with microservices, let's this kind of message passing, that kind of, I think they made the right choice.
Could you talk about some of the challenges you're facing now that you've taken on, of course, the billing system that predated you?
So we're in a consumer product, which is something I kind of talked about at the beginning, the sensitivities are very, very different. Mm. We have probably hundreds of ways into the product. We have partners. So, for example, you can sign up to Storytel through your mobile operator if you're in specific countries. So that's a way of signing up and getting billed, even though you're not putting in your own credit card details. We operate in unofficially, we're in hundreds of countries. Officially, we're in about 30 countries, which means we have payment processors in those countries. So we collect payments and we have like credit card forms and different like kind of payment methods, not just cards, but for example, in Denmark and Finland, and we have mobile pay. So there are multiple ways to pay for the product.
Yeah.
And sometimes the way that you come into the product changes what it costs. For example, if you come in through Apple or Google, it might cost more, because they take a surcharge for that service, right? Yep. Apple notoriously takes 30% from when you subscribe through the App Store, right? So that's also not an option in all countries. So there are like decisions being made on where do we have that alive and where do we not offer that. So that's a challenge. Again, kind of mapping out all the different ways that a customer can come in, what they're going to be paying, how much they're going to be paying, what kind of service they're going to be getting for that payment, and then figuring out what to communicate to them, how to give them like the ability to change what they're paying, upgrade, downgrade, so many different things.
Maybe we should talk a little bit more about the pricing as well at Storytel. Yes, we haven't done that actually. So you just walk us through, how does the offering look like if one would go to Storytel.com?
So generally, when you go to the website, you have a price that you can see. It's usually discounted. So there's a list price and there will be a discount. There, depending on when you come, there might be a special offer. Again, there might be like a special author that has just put out a very interesting book, and we will lower the price to make sure that more people can listen to it, that kind of stuff. And those are short-lived, these discounts, but generally there's like a list price and there will be an offer. And these offers, again, I said they could be active only if you come in through a partner, through a mobile operator. They might be only through a specific landing page. We might send out a campaign where we ask people, hey, you know, you subscribed in the past, you don't subscribe now, why don't you come back? Here's a cheaper price for the next half year, that kind of stuff. So basically there's an offer database that the individual markets decide on. So individual country managers, individual markets, and they can say, we want to have this offer for our customers for the next half year. And they have the tools to do that. So I don't actually interfere in that. Or I'm not a stakeholder in that anymore. There's just tools. Again, some of that has been built before my time even. There's pretty advanced tools for them to price things as they see fit for the market.
Just to run that back for you, I mean, as far as I can understand, you have the basic, the premium, and the family. And on the family side, you have several members, right? So there could be up to 6 members within the family package.
Yeah.
You also track per hour. You can call that usage, for example.
On some of the plans, yes.
On some of the plans, exactly. Yeah. And then also you mentioned, well, the big complexity you talked about before, that question that I posted to you now, but you also talked about the fact that you have different kind of modes of discount. And as a former customer of Storytel, you might lure me to get back. I don't know, you never know, after this conversation. But I actually can testify to some of the stuff that you said now, because I both have gotten the approach from you guys saying you've been a previous customer and here's a, you know, we want you back. Mm-hmm. At the same time, actually, I have an offer from my mobile operator.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. They're yeah. So it's happening at the same time, interestingly enough.
Yeah. But that's exactly the monetization strategy, right? So you kind of want to play in a lot of different games. You want to make sure that customers have a lot of ways into the product. And if they have, by the way, the ability to compare and say, well, I can sign up through Telia, it might cost me less, it's more convenient. That's value, right? That's value for the customer. And that's something that you think about when you're working in the B2C space, where in B2B, it's usually less of a factor. It's not that it doesn't exist, it's just less of a factor.
Could you talk to the question of how many SKUs and variations you have, stock keeping units? I understand if you can't be extremely explicit, but give us an approximation. Just want to understand the ballpark of the complexity here.
Yeah, hundreds, but there are hundreds. There are other companies that I know in similar spaces that have thousands. We have hundreds. I think that's already too many. Personally, I would ideally like to cut it down to very much fewer, right? I'd like to have maybe 3-4 per market. As it stands, there's a lot more. Storytel, however, also sells physical products. So we have like an ebook reader, and there's gift cards that come in physically. So there's a little bit more complexity to that. It's not a digital only product. So it's understandable having lots of SKUs in that scenario.
I take it that since you're a content platform from content owners, partner settlement might be or must be a big factor for you guys.
Yeah. Not for me. So
not for you, but
I focus on money in, right?
Yeah.
Revenue into the company. There are a lot of other people who handle that. I can't go into detail because I actually don't understand this very well. But I understand it's very complicated, right? There's lots of agreements and I actually don't know that much about it.
Yeah, and special deals that one needs to do with different owners and so on, and the consumption of, and okay.
And there's a lot of criticism always, you see this a lot with Spotify. There's a lot of criticism. You're not paying artists enough. You see this with Netflix. They're not paying for that movie enough, that actor. It's just a very, very complicated industry. Like all content industries are complicated. So books, movies, music, it's just very, very complicated. I wish it was not this complicated, but it is. And we're just the one player in that world.
I think there's a risk of if anybody put a counter on a dollar for every time you and me have said complex and complicated during this conversation, we'll be millionaires soon. But
you want to do a drinking game?
In our defense, though, I would say this is a very complex picture that you painted up. If I go back to the hundreds of ways that you are offering different ways of getting in and onto your platform, how you can actually pay, the way you get in that can influence the price versus an Apple or a Google or your telecom operator or directly via your site, the different countries, the taxes, then the payment models, the partner sentiments.
You know, it's very frustrating as a customer, by the way. Like I just came back from Thailand. While I was in Thailand, I wanted to watch some content that I downloaded to my tablet that I downloaded off Disney Plus. But when I opened the tablet, it was like, the content doesn't exist anymore. You can't watch it. That's just how that works. That probably means that Disney has a distribution agreement that they allow me to watch something in Denmark. The second my device connected to a different country, they know I'm not allowed to watch that, because the royalties would have to go through to a different company that they may not have an agreement with where I was, right? And they don't want to deal with that, so they just block that content.
Yeah.
That's an example, right? It's one of those things that these companies have to deal with, and they've made a decision to block that.
Yeah. which is a great example, because this is how we lose customers and we get customers frustrated. And in fact, it happened to be that I had a similar experience traveling from Sweden to Denmark with the exact same experience that you just shared.
Yeah. Even though you think these are homogenous markets, but they're not.
Correct. Correct. Can I ask you how much, given the picture that you painted, how much manual work do you guys do versus automated? Can you give us an approximation of, and also if you can point to where you believe that you're pretty mature from an automation perspective versus less?
Yeah. So generally everything to do with like the customer lifecycle is automated. As far as I know, we don't send like individual offers manually. It's not like someone goes in and says, "Ooh, I'll offer this person something." We don't like do manual billing runs. So no one actually has to like go in and charge a customer for something. There are manual intervention points. However, if a customer reaches out and says, "Hey, I was expecting to pay this much. I paid that much." Like we might need to figure out, were they eligible for something that they didn't get? So there are intervention points for that, which goes through tooling, through customer support and customer care and that kind of stuff. And sometimes people make mistakes. And sometimes when mistakes get made, a customer might be, for example, this is a theoretical example, might get charged the wrong VAT rate because the VAT rate changed between yesterday and today. That happens, especially when you're in hundreds of countries. You have to keep track of that. We might have missed it because we put in the wrong time zone for the VAT update. So then we have to undo all those invoices or all those receipts. We would have to credit them, refund them, and charge them again.
Yeah.
Like you can't just say, we can just refund the tax. Or you have to redo the entire thing. Because you have to make sure that you have one real receipt or invoice, right? So there are manual processes that happen when stuff breaks like that, or you know, when someone creates a mistake.
Understood.
But generally, the day-to-day business, everything is automated. One more thing. Some payment providers don't give us the correct APIs to pull out the fees that were paid. So let's create a random example. Let's say I'm using a card processor in Italy and they don't give me the fees that the Italian card user paid. So I don't know how much revenue I actually need to account for. So there might be a manual reconciliation process that we do once a month, that we pull out the report from the payment provider, we plug it into the system, and it just does the math and makes sure that we account for everything correctly. So that does happen in some countries.
Got it. Do you have Do you have a sense of if you could run the risk of revenue leakage somewhere across your process?
I'm sure it exists. I'm sure there's revenue leakage. I don't think it's a very big problem. If it was a very big problem, we would have fixed it. There's always the risk of, let's call it fraud, maybe friendly fraud. Sometimes you hear that, right?
Yeah.
But a situation where someone might be getting offers that they're not eligible for, or they're signing up multiple times with different emails.
Yeah.
And just so that they can get the longer trials so that they don't have to pay. So there is that. It's a problem, but it's not a problem that we care to do too much about, because usually when you start blocking these things, you end up blocking legitimate customers as well.
Yeah.
So there's always kind of that risk reward. Do we want to risk alienating more customers and reduce the revenue leakage? Or are we okay with some of that, with the understanding that this is not like a systemic problem? It's like some individuals who are might be a little bit more clever in gaming the system. So there is revenue leakage. I don't think it's a very big issue for us.
So it's not on the same level as when we all learned that Netflix had approximately 1/3 of its customer base basically doing account sharing. You don't have that size of problems. Okay.
Not to our knowledge, but... Yeah.
But this is also one of those catch 22 questions. I'm aware when I ask it is because if one would know, one would fix. And that kind of resides in the problem statement in itself, is that we don't know. And just as a bit of a fact here is that in our experience having dealt with companies, is I would say I'm not aware of any company who proudly have come to us and said we have 11% of revenue leakage, because that would be a bit odd.
Unexpected. I attended an event, and yeah, I think it was the head of security for Adidas said that they have 10% shrinkage. They call it like shrinkage, right? Where they lose about 10% of their stock in their online shop.
Yeah. And there are different, there are a couple of different ways one can go about speaking about this, but the experience that we can put on the table is that between 5 to 8% seems to be a fair estimation of revenue leakage across all the board of companies that we've been engaging with. Sometimes you actually get higher numbers than that. Of course, sometimes lower. So there has been cases north of 10% as well in terms of revenue leakage, and that probably speaks to the Adidas example that you gave. So, and the point of that is that it quite quickly grows into ridiculously large sums when it comes to revenue leakage. So that's a point to be aware of. Okay, it's time to wrap this up. Anon, and I have three final questions for you. The first one is, what are your recommendations for anybody who looks at improving their billing performance? Let's assume that you already have a system in place and you have to work with it.
Yeah. Try to think 2 years, like do an exercise with, you know, get some people in the room and do an exercise and figure out, okay, we're 3 years in the future, 4 years in the future. Here's how the market looks right now. Here are the key players. Here's where we are. Here's our revenue numbers. Here's where we're active. What does our system look like now? And try to like figure out where what had to change in order to get to that position. It's an exercise I always do with my teams. Sometimes we do it multiple times, because when you sit down and you do this exercise, there's tons of fantastic ideas and tons of things that you might not realize are going to be problems. So you might have to take like a little bit of an extreme example. Let's say if I'm taking Storytel as an example, we've now covered 100% of the globe. So we're active in all countries. We have local payment methods in all countries. And we're at 30 million active users. What had to change in order to support that, right? And that there could be process things that come up in that. And there could be risks that you identify, like, well, if we actually need to do that, we have to change these 75 different things. That's a possibility. So just doing that kind of little thought game, mind game, could be really, really eye-opening. And you want to get engineers in on that. You want to get business people in on that, like finance, marketing, again, customer lifecycle people. You want to get fairly broad views on that. So even if you're a product manager and you have engineers, or even if you're kind of running a pricing team and you're with, you know, data analysts and forecasters, do that kind of cross team thing, mix up the groups and have them kind of work off of each other's ideas, and they can ask each other questions and be like, well, I didn't think that tax was a problem. Why is tax a problem when we're global as opposed to local? Like, you learn a lot of things when you kind of do that cross team collaboration. So that would be my recommendation.
We can call that scenario planning, but I think it speaks very well to how, when we started the discussion earlier today, when you gave your view on why billing is complex, how it basically touches everything. I think this connects well to that with how you describe. Basically, you need a good company representation from business to technology 100%. And throughout the complete customer lifecycle. That's a great advice.
You can't decide on a billing system or monetization infrastructure without the business people, and vice versa. You can't build a monetization strategy without the engineers. It does not work.
Gotcha. Second question is, what is the one thing that you wish you knew when you embarked on your billing journey over at Pleo?
Just how many people care about pricing and care about how this looks to customers. I was given a lot of freedom at Pleo. We had a lot of autonomy, but just understanding how many people want to be involved and have opinions, that was very interesting to me. I thought no one cared. Because if you ask a child what they want to be when they grow up, no one says billing. No one says, I want to do pricing. But a lot of people have opinions, and it's very interesting to hear them out. You don't have to do anything about everyone's opinion, but at least hearing them out, I think that's very interesting.
And can you articulate how a perfected billing system at Storytel could look like? So now you have a chance to apply your own line of thinking. So we're 2-3 years maybe down the road. How does a perfected system look like?
Wow. It's a pipe dream. I don't think it exists in the price point that I can pay. But let's say a horizontally complete system that can take care of the entire journey from, like, again, the pricing pages on the website, experiments, A/B testing on pricing, like creating the upsell motions, figuring out the communications for that, all the way to the ERP integration. That would be phenomenal. We can leave the payment side externally still, but just handling that kind of life cycle, if that existed in a turnkey solution where I can put in here's like a scope of what I want to do and it did that for me, that would be amazing. So maybe that's the 3-4 years down the line, what does our system look like? Maybe that's what that is.
That sounds like a terrific billing system. I think we all want one of those, Arnon.
Yeah.
Arnon, thank you very much for this conversation. I've truly appreciated it. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Always love talking billing.